Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today's Wednesday, February 18th, the year of our Lord 2026. This is Coffee with JC Sherbert. Hope you're all having a wonderful week so far. Happy hump day to everyone. Don't forget, this morning is Wednesday. That means Tailgate Talks is up on the Chief Sports app with Pat DeMarco and Steven Garcia. Good episode this week, so check that out on the Chief app. You can download that on the Apple App Store or Google Play. It's all free. Has all of our programming and content there in a conveniently packaged app. So check that out. The morning show later today, Derek Scott, the voice of the Gamecocks, will be on. John Strickland, one of my favorite segments, talking ball with Jamie Bradford. It is Wide Open Wednesday. That means the Mad Dog and I will have the ITG chat box wide open for the show, taking your questions on any and everything from around the World Wide Web. You don't have to be a Club Chief member to do that. If you'd like to join Club Chief, it's on our YouTube channel, Chief Sports South Carolina, $4.99 a month. You can get in the chat box every day and talk Gamecocks. South Carolina won in baseball last night, 8-2 at Fifth Third Park in Spartanburg. Big night for KJ Scobie, 4-for-5, homer and 3 RBIs. Had a 2-run shot that kind of put the game on ice. Good to see KJ get a bunch of hits. He's about the only one. Talmadge LeCroy had a good night, multi-hit night, and hit a home run 2 batters before Scobie in the ninth. Gamecocks up 5-2, still struggled at the plate a little bit. Good outing by starting pitcher Connor Cicoli after giving up a leadoff homer. Kind of shut Wofford down. Gamecocks continue to be – this is interesting. I was thinking about this. As things stand now, we're only 4 games into the baseball season. So, you know, you win like that. That's good. You know, Wofford wasn't going to come in there and lay down. You go into a minor league ballpark, a big ballpark. You hit 2 home runs late. You'll take it. You know, it's better than over the weekend. And it gives you hope. They got Gardner Webb this afternoon at 4:30 at Founders. But, you know, I started thinking about this. And I've been talking about the losing a lot lately in men's sports, especially on the show. And I think another thing that probably is baffling to a lot of folks, and this stuff isn't coming from like the quote unquote media or analysts or experts or people like me. Now, certainly I've said it and I'll own it. I'll own it that I was wrong with something, but the coaches and people have said it. Think about this for a minute. In football, all offseason, there was concerns about the – everybody kept harping about concerns on defense. Lost the defensive, lost these guys, lost all these great players. Defense will take a step back. And it did. It wasn't a dramatic step back, and they certainly played collectively well enough for South Carolina to be better than 4-8 and continued to force turnovers. You know, you can have a leaky defense, and if you force a bunch of turnovers, that's a great equalizer, right? Stats aren't always pretty, but – and you can win games if you have an offense. And nobody's worried about the offense. Sellers is back, continuity, blah, blah, blah. And then it was just a disaster. You know, I think I said many times that offensive line, you know, has to get better. All these guys are back, and it was pretty shaky last year. And the interior guys that they lost were good players and all, but they've got highly touted guys. It just didn't work. And so South Carolina could not score after going into a season where nobody was really worried about the offense, right? So let's go to basketball. This is a team that was supposed to, at the very least, shoot well, right? And it was kind of a relief. And same thing with football. Football, a lot of Gamecock teams that have been quite good haven't exactly lit it up on the scoreboard, including Steve Spurrier's teams. They, you know, that would run the ball and play defense sometimes. So kind of a relief to think, well, you have to outscore people in football, and then in basketball, you know, you're just going to shoot a bunch of threes and actually be able to shoot well. And, you know, maybe, you know, you run into an athletic team, you have an off night shooting, not off months. And it's still a entertaining brand of basketball, and you're still going to be probably better than what you are right now. 7 straight losses after last night's loss to Florida on the road. Gamecocks did not get blown out like they did the first time. And I don't know that the Gators played their best, to be honest. But Meechie Johnson, nice game. He hadn't given up, obviously. But still a 14-point loss, 76-62 down there at the O-Dome. But and this is a team that cannot shoot and has the other problems people saw coming. You know, So there's that. So everybody thought and was told by coaches and everybody that the offense would be good, defense, worried about the defense. And next thing you know, basketball comes. Well, they'll be able to shoot. Well, they can't shoot. And then in baseball, you look at the portal acquisitions and the big concern in talking to people that know the game, like my friends that know it. The concern was the pitching staff, and then they thought they'd be able to hit the ball and have some power, and then the defense. They were like, well, when you don't know if you'd be quite as good defensively. Well, so far South Carolina's pretty salty defensively, and they're pitching really well through four games, and can't seem to hit the ball. So let's hope that doesn't continue, because that's like a whole academic year of psych. You remember psych? I don't know. Some of you are probably too old to remember or young to remember psych, but it's a big psych, right? And I was thinking about that. It's like, my goodness, it's like whatever the consensus is, at least for the time being, if baseball continues to not be able to hit, at least for the time being, maybe we should just go in the opposite direction, in my opinion. Whatever we say in the off season. And that's me and fan. I'm not worried about that. But just be worried about it. And then whatever you're really worried about, chances are it's going to be a little better than maybe you think.
But
Baseball last night, maybe it's one of those things. One thing that Derek, or not Derek, Stuart Lake, my man Stuart Lake, said on the broadcast last night about the bats. And I don't know. I mean, we kind of had a cold spell throughout the country. Right, so other teams too, but other teams hadn't been hitting the Gamecocks pitching. Let's keep that in mind. Is it unseasonably cold weather when you're trying to get ready for a season? It eliminates your ability to practice, and maybe they just need to get going, get in the swing of things. And that in baseball that happens more than other sports. It's you. I've watched the games since I was a kid. Not the ins and outs of it. I'll leave that to Jamie Bradford and John Whittle and people like that. But, I've watched it, and in baseball, it's true. Teams can go three or four games and not be able to hit, then they'll put up 15 runs. And it's just how it is. It ebbs and flows. It's a sport where if you do something really well, you do something good 30% of the time at the plate, that's great. 30%. So keep that in mind, just to kind of be positive about things. But we'll see what happens against Gardner Webb today, and then this weekend, Army, Navy, Air Force. I like that, bringing all three teams in. Paul Menieri, of course, was a coach at Air Force. South kind of scrimmaged them. So I like that. Salute to armed services. Those kids play baseball and, go to our finest military institutions here in the United States and serve our country. It's good to play them. You don't want to lose, especially don't want to lose the Navy. Yeah, that's there's some history around there, losing the Navy. But we'll see what happens this weekend, and then of course next weekend it's the Clemson series, so that's a big one for Menieri and for the program in general. So I just talked about how expectations are, for lack of a better term, cattywampus, and so I'm going to talk about off-season expectations from a national perspective in the sport of football today. So that's a great lead-in, JC. Here on coffee. And so there've been some national talking heads, and I respect all these guys. And so the ones that I don't really care about, I'm not probably going to mention unless they say something that sets me off a little bit, or that's just, not even sets me off. If you have an opinion and you're accurate about it, I don't mind. But if you're inaccurate or you pretend to know something about the Gamecocks that you don't, that I know you don't. I don't know everything, but there's some things that are just like cheap shot. I'll say something then. But for the most part, hot take city out there, I'm just not going to mention it, right? Unless I strongly disagree and it's not based in reality. These are all based in reality. They're positive takes, for the most part. And we're going to talk about that. Then we're going to talk about like how it could become a reality. Not trying to get anybody ahead of anything, because there are a lot of processes There's a lot of process that has to take place and that has to go in the Gamecocks' direction for this to happen. And that's before you even get to the season. So you're prepared to, in those games that inevitably can go either way, which there will be a slew of them, you're prepared to win. And even then, sometimes you got to, that ball you play with that's not round, that's oblong, that bounces funny ways. Sometimes you got to rely on that sometimes too. So there's a lot that has to happen. That's why, again, I'm talking about predictions. I don't, it's all about scenarios. But, what you do want to talk about and analyze is, can you prepare to get to that next step? Is there enough on your roster? Is there enough on your coaching staff to where you have a chance when you get there? And it's realistic. Ideally, and I don't know if there's a program out there anymore that could do this in this era. Ideally, if you're rolling like some schools have, like Alabama, you just need to not screw it up. I mean, that's not Nick Saban said many times, it's not like they had some game day great X's and O's coaching, tacticians all over the place. Saban's a great defensive coach, don't get me wrong, but they went out there and had their players ready to go and got themselves in position and then dominated. And so that's kind of what all of this leads into. But I'll start with Greg McElroy because I got this Bill Gunner. I was on 107.5 yesterday, and Bill Gunner asked me about it because McElroy had said that top 10 playoff sleepers for next year. He mentioned South Carolina. And for those of you that were around in 2014, it may be the kiss of death. Remember, Greg McElroy predicted the Gamecocks to go to the first four-team college football playoff. And God, if they'd had a defense that just was not awful, they may have been able to do it because that actually was a really good offensive team. Dylan Thompson set records, and Spurrier really liked calling plays for Dylan Thompson. Dylan was. Not that he didn't for Connor Shaw or Steven Garcia or Blake Mitchell or anybody else, but Dylan had such a good arm and would drop back and fire. It's kind of like it's a preference. That's the kind of guy Spurrier liked. And so the head ball coach dialed him up pretty good that year. And then in most games, Clemson game, not so much, but it just wasn't meant to be because of the defense and. Giving up the blowing four quarter leads and all that. So McElroy's prediction was off, but it wasn't like South Carolina, at least on one side of the ball, had a bad team. And nobody really, based on, again, the information and some public comments, nobody thought that the defensive drop off would be that bad, except me. And it was. I mean, you can't go to battle with the type of talent they had that year. Well, in 2014 on that side of the ball. But so that's the McElroy background, right? But he said, so maybe it's not the kiss of death. I mean, it's 12 years later. It's been more than a decade. He said they have quarterback clarity, and that's always good. Lenore Sellers is going to be the guy. He's back. It's his third year as the starter. It'll be his fourth year as a college quarterback. He's now an older player. Of course, there's the system and all that good stuff. McElroy mentioned the coaching hires Beamer had made, that he liked those. I'm assuming him being a former quarterback, he likes Kendall Briles and that. And I agree with him. I think that's a positive thing. He says they have identity. And we talk a lot about identity. Sometimes I think that's overrated and overused because people will start talking about identity when things don't work. What's the identity? And what you're seeing there is it's more that they don't establish an identity. In other words, you have a what you want to be, but then it doesn't happen. So coaches start to try different things. And it appears like you don't have, because you don't. That's true. But, it's not just something you can whip up out of midair. Your identity comes from what you do well and then doing it and executing it. That's what we do. That's what you have to stop coming into the game. Period. Sometimes you can't do an identity because everything you do is easy to stop because you're predictable and you're deficient and all that good stuff. But identity. Now, so what does he mean by identity? Well, on offense, I think that's to be determined because the great thing that we've mentioned many times about Kendall Briles' offense is it's adaptable to its players. So the identity there could be one thing one year, one thing the next. But and that is in and of itself an identity. It's very adaptable, right? You do know there's certain things he likes to do. He likes to run RPOs. He likes to run tempo, and so those will be part of the identity. But yeah, you know, and I think those are at a baseline. But then, you know, are they more of a running team or a passing team? Well, you know, you look at the history of this offense, and you know, going back to Baylor, sometimes they were heavy run, sometimes they were heavy pass. They did both efficiently and well most years. So, offense is to be determined. But on defense, you got to look at all three phases. You know, what is South Carolina's identity right now when you look at it? Offense to be determined, but you know they're sellers and. You know that you have Nick Harbor out there, and we'll talk about those guys in a second from another team of experts. But you know that's one thing, and we tend to gravitate the discussion about identity towards offense. Well, defensively, you know, South Carolina is creative on defense. I think that's an identity. They also force turnovers. That's the number one thing. South Carolina's led the SEC in forced turnovers the last 3 years, like over the course of the last 3 years. I think they led in turnovers forced last season too. I don't personally think you can count on that every single season, but Clayton White, with the way they do get takeaways, has made more of a believer out of me. And I look back on it, you know, the 2017 team under Muschamp, that defense took the ball away a lot. But in 18, they just weren't coming. You know, it was they lost some players that were good at punching it out. And that defense had, of course, a rash of injuries at the end, but you just didn't get a break. I mean, they didn't get the breaks. And sometimes it is the other guy drops the ball or whatever. But now, through 3 seasons, when teams know, hey, don't turn the ball over against these guys, protect the ball and all that. And that does happen. You know, coaches emphasize things every week depending on their opponent. Like, well, South Carolina's good at taking the ball away, so we need to do, you know, work on ball security and not making mistakes. Well, you know, that doesn't always work out that way. So I think at this stage, we can safely say that the big identity on defense is turnovers. And you've seen programs, you know, Virginia Tech was really big on that when. Frank Beamer was there. It was defensive turnovers and special teams and all that good stuff. So I think that's kind of if you just had a one word defensive identity, it would be turnovers. And then special teams are good. And you know, some people may disagree with that. We talked about that yesterday, and based on you know the 2022 season, which can't be it's not going to be easily replicated, folks. So I don't care who's coaching the special teams. But Carolina's good at covering kicks. They block. You got to prepare for them to their blocks, and all that. They, you know, people prepared for the return game with Swain. You know, they have a good punter. You can count on those things. And so you look at the South Carolina does have identity as a football program, regardless of a 4-8 record. And I think that's kind of what McElroy's talking about. And the hope is that they establish one on offense. A lot has to happen for that to happen. And then that's the what, but then but that's the kind of how. But then the what is to be determined because we don't really know what are they going to be good at. Are they going to be, I've talked about Lenore Sellers mastering the RPO game. Will he, and then will that be what they do? You know, will it be more of a, you know, not a ground and pound, but sort of like when Baylor would just run. Will they be able to run block better? I mean, a lot depends on the offensive line as well. So that's to be determined. But I'll say this: I feel more confident about the path to establishing an offensive identity this year than maybe in years past. And honestly, even though I'll freely admit I was wrong about Shula and thought that there would be some continuity there, I couldn't sit there and really tell you. The identity. I do think Mike Shula wrongfully or decided that the power run was going to be part of the identity of this football team. I think that explains a lot, you know, why he had a bigger off the offensive line kind of skewed bigger and the insistence on being stubborn with the run. And it just did not work. It just did not work. Did not work. So maybe at least every coach tries to have an identity. How about that? But we'll see what happens there. So, and then he said scheduling path. Now, I wouldn't say this if I were anybody about a schedule. I just, with all the transition rosters, you got new coaches. South Carolina on the schedule next year, I believe it's how many new coaches? Florida, well, two. Florida and Arkansas have new coaches that they brought in. Who else? Anybody else? No, nobody else has new. Kent. I don't know about Kent and Towson. Yeah, so just about, just two teams have new coaches, but everybody has roster transition. But scheduling path, and I think, when you just look at the first three games, I mean, like I said yesterday, you got Kent and Towson to kind of get it going, and then you don't have to go hit the road for Georgia or something, your first SEC game, which could cause some shock. Not that Mississippi State won't be formidable, because they absolutely will. This is year three for Jeff Lebby. They got a little better last year, and then I think they could get a little better this year. That's not easy, right? Now, they haven't won at South Carolina since, I believe, 1998. So it's been almost 30 years since the boys from Starkville have come to Columbia and gotten a W. Maybe they're due. That would not be pleasant. But of the teams out there, you'd probably rather play Mississippi State at home to open the SEC season and ease into it than have to go where the next game is, and out to Tuscaloosa. Alabama. Yeah, a lot of folks think they'll take us another step back this coming year. Still a lot of good players. This may be, Kalen DeBoer's type of team, though. This may actually be a more consistent Alabama team. You just don't know with all that. So, three new coaches. My bad. Because, like I said, you just don't know what the transition and all that good stuff. It feels like South Carolina's due against Bama because of the last 2 years, but man, we'll worry about that the week of September 26th, right? Gotta going to Bryant-Denny as your SEC road opener. Kentucky has a new coach, so they come in after that. They come to Williams-Brice, second straight year. They look a little rejuvenated. I know Kentucky fans will probably be happy to see a different offense, more wide open offense under Will Stein and that staff. And Jay Bateman is their new defensive coordinator. Carolina's dialed him up against him several times through the years. They did it, had a good offensive line haul in the portal. They got some players. We'll see where they are October 3rd, but South Carolina should beat them. I mean, just on paper looking at it, that you got to show it for every game, but Kentucky coming in, that's another good chance, good opportunity. Then you go to Florida, they got a new coach. Spurrier said during a press conference on Zoom the other day that Florida has 50 new players. That could be good or bad for them. I think that you look at it and John Summer, first of all, the quarterback is an issue. They still have Jaden Ball. Summerall's a good coach. Billy Napier did leave behind some really good players that stuck with Florida that you thought may leave. Now Lagway's gone. I don't know how many Gators really care, but we'll see. We'll see how the quarterback situation is. The Swamp's been very tough to win in for Carolina. Gamecocks have won there a grand total of two times. So we'll see. But hey, would you rather go to Florida? Would you rather go to LSU? I'd rather go to Florida, just on paper. Off week, Tennessee comes to town. Speaking of House of Horrors, it's been that way for the Vols at Williams-Brice Stadium. Even the games they've won have been, I don't want to say flukish, but very close. I mentioned 14. They came in and won in 2020 in the opener. That was one the Gamecocks let get away. Should have won it. That Tennessee team ended up not being worth two nickels. I think they finished 3-7. But other than that, gosh, you had the big Beamer win the last time, and then they cycled off the schedule. Now, going to Knoxville is a different story. So at Tennessee, at Oklahoma. Oklahoma, Mateer's back. They're still going to be good on defense. It's out there. It's Halloween. That could be tricky. Texas A&M's in next. I think the Gamecocks actually, when you kind of consider it, they played pretty doggone well against the Aggies. Really, after Beamer's first year when they got blown out, the next year in 2022 they won. They went out there with a undermanned team and lost, but if it hadn't been for some blown coverages in the second quarter, it could have been a different game. They came back and blew them out in 2024, and then the collapse at College Station was a 1-point loss. But Carolina had them down first half pretty good. So we'll see there. Go to Arkansas. They have a new coach. Then, in one of the most interesting scheduling things ever, it's Georgia, and then you go up to Clemson. So it gets pretty real at that point. So there is a scheduling path, but you don't know. I mean, what if Florida's like rejuvenated and really good and they ambush the Gamecocks? What if, like I said, Alabama under DeBoer, that's his team now, and he's got it. Tennessee's Aguilar's back, and they can beat you in a shootout, and they're good on defense with Knowles. Oklahoma, A&M, what if Arkansas is surprisingly good under Ryan Silverfield, and we just don't know it? What if Clemson replaces all their players they lost at a high level, and they play more together as a team? I mean, shoot, you can't really say much about that game anyway because you lost it by two touchdowns. But is there a path? As you look at it right now, yeah, there's a path, a scheduling path. I'll buy that. So that's what McElroy said. Josh Pate had a look, my friend, had a little bit different take. I guess he was asked if South Carolina was the next Indiana. He said, South Carolina has elite players. They got great players. And he said they don't have a great roster. I don't know. It's probably an unknown roster outside of the known. But like I mentioned yesterday, there's eight receivers on the roster that were rated 4 stars or higher out of high school. There's a lot of really good defensive players like Vakari Swain. There's young players that are very good. There's enough, there roster wise. But like Pate said, you got to find an edge. And Shane, he said he didn't know what it was. Shane Beamer's got to find that edge. And I agree. And I don't know what it is either. What gives South Carolina an edge? What gave Indiana an edge is they didn't make mistakes. They executed at a high level. And then when you talk talent, these days it's close enough to where if you do the other things right, you're going to win. And it's still Indiana had some close ones. It's close. Iowa was close. They escaped Penn State on the road. Ohio State was a 3-point game in the Big Ten championship game. So they were in some dogfights that could have gone either way, right? They won them all, but you're going, even the best Alabama teams, even the best Georgia teams recently, the best Clemson teams, when they went undefeated, they've all had challenges. So you're not going to escape that. You're going to have to win close games at some point. But Indiana found that edge with Kurt Cignetti and how they coached, and quite frankly, how their players played. Andy Staples and Ari Wasserman from On3 briefly mentioned South Carolina and said they've been talking about it. And South Carolina's got a lot of freaks. I think you need freaks. You mentioned Dylan Stewart, Lenora Sellers, Nick Harbor, Jacarius Peak is on the freaks list, offensive tackle. So I think any team that wants to go to the playoff does need its share of freaks. Now, Indiana have some freaks. I would argue Fernando Mendoza played pretty freaky this past year at quarterback. And I think some of those guys were kind of freaky. Now, probably not freaky like we defined it. We gravitate towards physical attributes in the evaluation world when talking about freaks. But maybe you can do freaky things. But yeah, I mean, when you're talking about you got a 6'5", 240-pound receiver that's a Olympic level sprinter. And when you talk about Dylan Stewart, I think they called him an alien, and Lenore Sellers is alien-like as well when he's at his best. Yeah, there's some freaks on this roster. And so they were talking them up. So Pate said you got to find an edge. McElroy said you got quarterback clarity, identity, and a scheduling path. And then Andy and Ari were talking about freaks. Now, how do they get there? Okay, so the freaks, have to be freaky football players. Yeah, I mentioned Mendoza was kind of freaky. It's because he played freaky. He's like the guy that, I hate to bring this up, a sore spot, but the guy in basketball that's just, drilling threes left and right in people's face, doesn't matter. He's on fire. Steph Curry, probably not a freaky athlete, freaky basketball player. That's the kind of thing. Nick Harbor, freaky athlete, need him to be a freaky football player. Same with Dylan Stewart, same with Lenore Sellers, same with Jacarius Peak, whoever. So, the freaks have to be freaks, but I think a lot's up to the players. Are they going to dial in? We mentioned Indiana earlier. They're players. I mean, people talk about coaching, and coaching is getting your players to buy in and making sure they stay bought in. The players bought in and believed that was a very confident football team. I mean, you walk on the field against the University of Miami and their home field for a national championship, and you clearly, and they've got more talent. They had more freaks than Indiana, and you have more confidence than they do. You have more swagger than, what world were we living in when Indiana has more swagger than the U in a national championship game? I mean, the U kind of feel, they feel like they invented swagger. Well, not in that game. You watch them. You watch who played with more confidence, who played with more toughness, who was more resilient? The Hoosiers. So, I mean, you got to have that buy-in, and the coaches can do a certain point, and it is ultimately up to them to get their players to do it. But these days, the players have to. There's a lot of, you got to love the game, you got to hate to lose, you got to want to. And Beamer preaches that. All the coaching staff at South Carolina, that's part of the culture of the program. But you got to go play like it. And how do you play like it? Well, you get yourself ready over the offseason. There are a ton of guys with sky-high potential relative to where they're at now. And this is especially true in the transfer portal, a lot on the defensive line, but a lot of the other transfer portal guys. And then some guys, and then the returning guys. The portal guys and the returning guys, it is up to them this offseason to get ready to go play and then go do it. Go do it. Play like your hair is on fire. Go out there and not to use it. That's a Dabo-ism. But, some of these guys have a lot of talent. And in the previous stops, maybe they haven't played I don't want to say as motivated or as hard all the time or as tough all the time. But everybody from Kelby Collins to Caleb Herring to Gabe Brownlow Dindy, who's coming back to Troy Pye, all these guys on the defensive side, Fred Johnson, Justin O at linebacker, Sean Murphy, they all have to lock in and play their best. And I talked about the secondary earlier this week, and Hale McGranahan reported that Gerald Kilgore is going to go to nickel. I think it's a good spot. I'm behind that. Kilgore, good against the run. That's kind of where his brother played. He's got good ball skills. I'm there for that. So it's Kilgore, Holloman, and then Quasheed Scott. That could maybe allow you to play Quasheed at corner some more if Gerald's good. Gerald's got a knack for the ball, so that's good. So I did want to kind of correct that because I did the episode and then read that Hale had reported that. So. On the bigspur.com. So give him credit for that, but didn't want to mention that. That's a good move. I like that. But guys like him have to lock in and play. You're going to have injuries, so inevitably somebody's going to get it. So how are they going to compensate for that with reserves? And then offensively, you got to lock in and execute, and you got to block somebody. And the players all have to do that. On the offensive line, those that remain need to, Surratt, Thompson, Marquis Anderson, Nolan Hay, Blake Franks, Demola, Ejidohun, all those guys. They need to take a step forward, and the newcomers need to adapt and get ready for SEC football. Some of them are coming from lower levels, so you got to get ready. So lots up to the players. Then there's coaching, and there's the off-season coaching and getting them ready and teaching them the teaching part of it that happens in practice, the development part, the making sound personnel decisions, identifying your best players and playing them, and putting them in position to go win. And then there's the game day stuff, and a lot of it didn't go Beamer's way last year. A lot of them were 50-50 calls, any coach will tell you that it's a 50-50 proposition, but a lot just didn't seem to work. So those have to work. Get your share of wins as the head coach on game day. Have good strategies and game plans and then execute it. Then a lot also depends on other teams. Just went through the schedule. How good or not good are these teams going to be? And before you say, well, South Carolina can only win if everybody else is down. That's applicable to just about everybody. You're not running up a big record if your schedule's a bloodbath. You need to get some breaks. And last year, everybody on the schedule was up except Kentucky, and they beat Kentucky. I mean, Clemson. I mean, in the conference, Clemson wasn't up, and that game still. If any game should like make you livid, it's that one. Alabama and A&M were certainly massive disappointments because they had it and blew it. But Clemson game, man, it was just like the ending of a. It's like, oh, let's just get out of here. Not that the players didn't care. It just how the game unfolded was a kind of a microcosm of the entire season. So some moments of hope followed by reality setting in and bafflingly bad plays in key situations. How about that? That's a good way to summarize it. But the schedule was realistically, everybody was LSU wasn't as up as they expected to be. I'll say that. And Missouri fell off after they lost their quarterback, but at the time, Missouri and LSU were really good. So you got to get some breaks, man. Texas A&M gladly took the breaks last year and got to the playoff. Tennessee the year before. There's no time for pride when you're talking about that. So other teams, I'm not saying they have to be bad teams, but when you have two or three, Ole Miss and A&M, this is the best season they've ever had. Vanderbilt's the best season they've ever had. It's three teams on your schedule. You only played eight last year. You played nine this year. So you got to get some breaks. And especially in that first part of this, until you get to, I think we all know going to Oklahoma is going to be tough. Going to Alabama is always tough. But, when you look at like on paper, where are the expectations right now, which this will change and it's probably not going to be accurate. Going to Oklahoma will be tough. Playing Georgia at the end of the year will be tough. Going up to Clemson is always tough, though. We may be at the stage of the rivalry where, like in the mid-90s, where they're knocking each other off on their home field. Carolina's won two in a row up there. I don't know what expectations are going to be like at Clemson this next season. My guess is they'll be better than people may think. There'll be a lot of predicting their demise. So we'll see. But other teams, you gotta get a break. It's not going to be an easy schedule. It'll be a gauntlet again. And there's nine games, but it starts off well and all that. So those are the keys to me for this to be any kind of sleeper playoff team. I don't expect this conversation to be as prevalent as maybe it was last offseason, but like Bill Gunner and I agreed yesterday on, it's not bad to have positive publicity. You don't want to sit there and predict it. And I think every single person that's affiliated with Gamecock Athletics should be absolutely be in show me mode for every men's sport at this point. But a little good publicity is not that bad. So anyway, that's what's going on out there. I have noticed, there's quite a few people mentioning South Carolina in the conversation right now as we, gosh, it's almost March, so it'll be heavy list season soon. Lenore Sellers, Heisman odds are still up there. I think he's tied for 12th with Gunnar Stockton. So all that stuff, you gotta look forward to digesting all of that in the coming months. That's why I'm kind of hoping Gamecock baseball wins and we can have coffee. Will always be about football, obviously, but we can kind of, we don't have to just talk about football lists and takes and all that for months and months and months. I have something else pot, good to talk about. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, don't forget the morning show coming up. John Strickland, Derek Scott, Tailgate Talks podcast version's up on our app. Please go to their YouTube channel at Tailgate Talks 547. Hit that subscribe button for them. Pat and Steven do a wonderful job. We're proud to partner with those two guys. Steven recently had a birthday. Happy birthday to Steven Garcia. And Pat DeMarco is opening a business in Columbia that we're going to talk about on the shows. Also, after that, the show, Wide Open Wednesday. Sports Talk tonight, 6 to 8 p.m. We also have the Late Night Gamecock Show is up on podcast now. So go hit subscribe on their podcast channel on Apple or Spotify. Add them to your playlist. Matt and Alex do a great job there. All right. This has been Coffee with JC Sherbert. Have a wonderful Wednesday, everybody. We'll see you on the show. Holla.